Yeah, I wanted to say that if you don't mind, consider this as being in an informal group meeting between some people who have been working on TaubNet ADS for some time, and that we hope to reopen this very nice subject. By the way, lots of the work on these geometers have been done around here by people like Rob Mann, Kubiznak, and some collaborators. That was it was a nice motivation for us to continue working on in this direction. I will not discuss any of this stuff, just mention it. It would be nice to continue this direction. So my aim, since this talk has been arranged a little bit in the last few days, I think what I will try to do is I will try to tell you how basically holography works from the point of view of gravity without any mention on strings, CFTs, brains, etc. Of course, maybe you will find interesting in particular the connection to what one can call canonical gravity, because I just wanted to say a few words about that, which gives you the motivation to study basically anything gravitational in terms of holography, without asking whether it makes sense, it doesn't make sense. Well, it gives you motivation to do that. Right. So you may have heard that recently, in the past years, there is a discussion between asymptotically, locally, the ADS spacetimes. There is a connection, spacetimes, and something in the boundary, which are basically relativistic fluids. And in this talk, I will mainly concentrate towards three dimensions. Okay, this is a general thing. What we have done with a group of people that are here and also other people who are somewhere in Europe, we tried to take this thing seriously and actually work it both ways. So, at least for me, a relativistic fluid actually can define a bulk spacetime. And I don't see, at least in some cases, any distinction between them. In what sense? In the sense that if you consider some exact solutions of Einstein's equations, and in particular, the simplest one are vacuum solutions, they have a description as a relativistic fluid. And if it works both ways, well, you should be able to start from the relativistic fluid and reconstruct this bulk solution. So we are talking about reconstruction, or bulk reconstruction. Okay. These are just words. I'm just mentioning here some of our previous works that have been done in this direction. The general picture, at least, that we have been able to show is that if you start with a perfect fluid, perfect relativistic fluid, I will write later what do I mean by that. On a generic, well, generic in a sense, in a generic stationary background,
stationary from the 3D.
From the 3 point of view, sir. Yeah, this is the boundary. So one is able in many cases to reconstruct a whole class of solutions in general. I think Demyansky type of solutions in which many bulk solutions exist. So from the point of view of classical gravity, this is this and that is that. So that gives you a nice thing because well, you can study this, if you want, by studying a fluid and all its equations and all its properties. So that's the kinematic thing. Now, you can understand that this is a fluid, so you are doing a completely different... You are doing here fluid dynamics. So here the fluid has hydro variables. Variables, for example, temperature, pressure, a velocity field, which is very important. It has equations like hydrodynamic equations. It has an entropy, which is something that it is not clear, at least to me, how you can put it in the bulk yet. The entropy current, well, let's call it the entropy current. So it gives you a lot of ways to study something that you know corresponds to an exact solution. There have been a number of works in this direction. Okay, and I would say that after Schwarzschild, ADS, which is the original story. People studied Kerr ADS. Kerr ADS 4. So there is a corresponding fluid. I will talk a little bit about that. And of course, we here are to study Taubnat ADS 4 with the intricacies that it has. All these correspond to the boundary, to perfect relativistic fluids, and the difference between the various solutions, various fluids, is the boundary. So in a sense, you can talk about the same fluid in different boundaries. Think about it in a more general way. What characterizes a Schwarzschild solution is just the mass. Okay, here, the bulk mass is, of course, related to the boundary, temperature, pressure, etc. Here, how many parameters? You have the mass and you have the rotation parameter. Well, a perfect fluid still has temperature, pressure, and energy density if you want, but this is a conformal fluid, so pressure, energy density are equivalent. But then this guy has the A parameter that characterizes the background. The background is rotating. And here you have again a mass, you have the nut charge, and here in the boundary you still have these things, and the nut parameter characterizes the background. On the more general point of view, not much. Well, there is not much work done in relativistic fluid mechanics on fluids in non-trivial backgrounds, surprisingly. Usually people consider, right, relativistic fluids, expansions, but around usually flat backgrounds. So this is a nice also exercise in relativistic fluid mechanics. Now, let me go a little bit ahead. I have a...
Just, can you...
Yeah.
here talking about the perfect free. So now, suppose you do perturbation in the bark. What does that correspond to in the giving? Yeah.
So there, that's the thing here.
Okay.
That's, yeah, of course, you need to shake it. But okay, I will go gently, starting in the beginning for the dynamics.
What about this Plevansky, Damiansky class? Is that, are the algebraically special, or what's the, or it's more general than that?
Yes. Well, at least the non-trivial solution like the Robinson-Trautmann is algebraically special. Yes. But I think it is more general than that, I think. I'm not sure, but definitely the RT, which is the Robinson-Trautmann solution, which is one of the very interesting and still open. You know what is the Robinson-Trautmann? It's a time-dependent solution, which should give you a time-dependent, it gives you a time-dependent fluid in the boundary. And it's an open question, again, how to realize it holographically. Although, okay, we tried. Many people, some people try. All right, now, one of the things that I wanted to do, although I'm sure that many people know it about it, is to tell you how this works, how generic holography works. In the context of classical gravity, so just classical gravity. So I will write a few lines on holography, which for me is the essence of holography, and you may find it connected to people that that you do to things that you do here as well. So. Let me write the following thing now. So I say holography from canonical gravity. What do I mean by that? I will be very descriptive. There is a formulation here that you can do, and I think it's rather general, maybe less appreciate it. So if you write the Einstein-Hilbert axiom in the first order formalism, let me be a little bit explicit, 32 pi g Newton, epsilon a b c d r wedge lambda over 2 ea eb. ED. I guess you know what I mean by that. The curvature, the field bind, I'm in 4D. This is equivalent in the second order formalism to minus 1 over 16 pi G plus 6 lambda with the square root minus G. Okay, just be sure. Now, many years ago, we formulated something that we can call the initial value formulation. Of holography, in the sense that you can write a canonical description of gravity, not only as a Hamiltonian evolution, but as an evolution along a space-like direction. So this is not really a Cauchy problem, but you can call it a boundary value problem. But it is.
Well, like from the S boundary, you reconstruct. Right?
From the S boundary, right? I reconstruct, yeah. Yes. I reconstruct the bulk equation. With the radial direction. And just to tell you how just how this can be done, this is done if you choose the components of your one forms like that. You are always free to do that. It's the general deformation. Now, this is in the three directions, and the spin connection has like a Q0 alpha dt. Now, this is probably standard. It's definitely standard in many things, but I just want to write a few formulas here for reminding them. Okay, alpha goes from 1, 2 to 3, 0 is the 0. When I put a tilde, I mean that I am in the 1, 2, 3 directions. And this, I have a metric which is like sigma perpendicular plus and sigma 3, such that sigma perpendicular times sigma 3 is minus 1. So I can be either Lorentzian if this is minus and this is plus, or I can be Euclidean, and the three-dimensional space-time would be Lorentzian. And that is the thing. Now, OK, that's the general decomposition. And so if you do that, and you do the calculations,
you can
slide the blackboard, and there is a blackboard behind. Yeah, if you prefer. Like that? Okay. All right. Okay. Okay. I could do that. All right. Where is the other blackboard? Ah, it's a long block. Okay.
Sorry.
No, that's... Yeah, I wanted to write these formulas, but I wanted to present these formulas, which are known for reasons that I hope will become clear. So, right, the action now, the Einstein-Hilbert action, is like that. I will be a little bit more fast here. 8pg, the integral dt. Now you see, dt is my one form along which I will do the evolution. I have this k alpha wedge sigma dot alpha, where sigma will define it. And then I have a bunch of constraints. Let me not write the constraints. There is a constraint lapse. There is a shift constraint, you can call it. I will not write the constraints. But there is a constraint with a q, 0 alpha. They are interesting, the constraints, and there is something which is like sigma, this q tilde, what's kb, what's eb. Okay, so that's the usual formulation. Now, this sigma is something like 1 over 2. And so on, alpha, beta. So it's a surface element. And so the dot means that it's distributed. The dot here, it's the time, it's the t derivative. So obviously, what you want to do now is not quantize the theory, but holography tells you that what you need to do is you need to take the variation to make a variational problem of this thing here, a well-defined variational problem. And you can assume that the constraints are satisfied. So you are going on shell. So this is basically holography. And there are, and the way to do it, as again is well known, the way to do it is to add here, you know, in order to make the well-defined the variational problem, you have to tell me what do I keep fixed in the boundary. And the reason why I'm presenting that is because maybe that's not entirely known. You can either fix in the boundary the this Philbin, or you can actually fix in the boundary this one form here, which is a part of the connection, and which is the usual thing that we do in a dynamical system when you have the variables, you know, when you have your axiom, which is integral pq dot minus a Hamiltonian pq. Well, now, if you want to write the on-shell axiom, well, you can fix q in the boundary, or you can fix p in the boundary. And the difference between the two different approaches is a canonical transformation. It's a canonical transformation of your p and q variables. It's exactly the same thing here. Okay, this is a long story, but it is not maybe so well known. It's exactly the same. Let me, if you bear with me 1 minute, write for you the final result, in a sense. The final thing.
So here the idea is that T can be anything. It can be both nature, right?
Yes. We don't see any reason why this T can be time-like or space-like, at least from this point of view. So, the usual thing, one of the usual things that people do in holography, not in holography, is you add the Gibbons, the so-called Gibbons-Hawking term, which in this language here is nothing but a term in the boundary, which is like PQ, boundary term, boundary in whatever direction you want there, such that your on-shell variation of that, of this axiom, becomes 8PG integral in the boundary epsilon alpha beta gamma k alpha wets e beta wets delta e gamma. So your variation is zero if e is fixed in the boundary. And this is what people do. Now, in an asymptotically flat formulation of gravity, this is fine. The problem with ADS is the thing that actually Pfefferman and Graham did, and this is really a remarkable, I think, discovery. The thing that Pfefferman and Graham did was that you can solve the equations like that. L is a parameter plus E minus TL sum over 0 to infinity F K plus 2 alpha X terms E minus KTL. So in order to satisfy the equations, you have this so-called Pfefferman-Graham expansion. And the problem is in the Fefferon-Graham expansion that the boundary that these terms here at t goes to infinity, sorry, it's the boundary of ADS, diverge. So it's the asymptotic is the asymptotic behavior of your field bind. Also the same for k. Same for k, and that's the only thing I want to write. Plus, okay, some other terms. So k also diverges. So what people have done, it was a big story of ADS-CFT. They were doing the so-called holographic renormalization. They were modifying this axion, actually the bulk axion, this axion, by terms, such that when I take the variation, I end up with contributions that are finite at t goes to infinity. And to cut a little bit the long story short, from this point of view, the holographic renormalization is just a canonical transformation of your boundary, of your canonical variables. It's a canonical transformation of the variables E, K, and you can show that it gives exactly and in all dimensions, not only four dimensions, what people are adding, were adding by hand to make this renormalized. This is one part of the story. The other part of the story is that you may notice that this guy here and this guy here, actually, they have the same asymptotic behavior. So, as I was saying, it doesn't make sense. Well, fixing E in the boundary, the field bind, or fixing K, which is a part of the connection, is the same thing. And in the case of fixing E, well, we said how to do it because we had the Gibbons-Hawking term. In the case of fixing the connection, there is another remarkable thing. What you can do is you don't add the Gibbons-Hawking term, but you add the Euler density here. If you do that, well, you find the remarkable, I think, result. Let me write it like that. It's something like minus 8 pi g integral in the boundary, this sigma, which I defined here, wedge delta k alpha. That is your variational problem when you fix k in the boundary, and you achieve that by adding to the Einstein-Hilbert axion the Euler term. Remarkably, this is the so-called exactly with the, there is an exact coefficient because you have to add some exact coefficient here. It's the so-called McDowell-Mansouri axion in four-dimensional gravity. So the story is that both these things give you the same holography. And so what is holography in this sense? What is what you get eventually? What you get eventually is the following thing. What you get eventually from doing this and that. So suppose that I do it. I do all this holographic renormalization, which means that I do the canonical transformation, which I haven't shown, but well, you have to believe me. So I do that. And what is the final result? The final result, let me write it, S, the renormalized axion on shell, is exactly 3 sigma You see, I kept this thing here because, you know, you want to put it, for example, minus if you are in the sitter. And it is like that, the boundary of the bar. Gamma F3, I will explain what is that, E beta, what's delta E gamma. Now, all right, and this is the whole point of, I think, holographic reconstruction in one line. E, this E, small e, was a bulk Philbine. I expanded it in an infinite series of terms in this coordinate, in a power series in the coordinate T. I'll use the exponential as Pfefferman Graham did. And it, this infinite series has terms, one forms in this case, valued in the Lorentz, in the tangent space, has one form that depends only on the boundary dimension, on the boundary coordinates. But it's an infinite number of them. What you can show is that since this is a set of this is a second order differential equation or sets of first order differential equations, there are two terms that completely fix the solution. One term is this guy here, which you can call the boundary Philbine, and the other term is this guy here, it's independent, which is the boundary, if you want, well, if this is the position, this is the velocity. If this is the initial position in the initial formulation problem, so okay, I have in mind an initial surface that evolves in the t direction. The initial surface is described by E, A, it is described by a connection which I didn't write, which is the magnetic field. The magnetic field that I wrote here, B, it's a part of the connection, is the connection in three dimensions. So you start with a manifold that is described by kind of geometry like that. You give to this manifold an initial velocity, this guy here, and this manifold evolves into a bulk spacetime. And that's what you can show for at least all this class of Plebansky-Demyansky solutions. Okay, well, you can play here with phase spaces, with canonical transformations, and they have a physical meaning, as I tried to explain. Okay, so from holography, in holography, the interpretation of this guy, okay, it's clear, is the boundary metric, and the interpretation of this guy is the boundary stress energy tensor. So these two ingredients should suffice to reconstruct your bulk geometry. This is, I think, a nice language, which now allows you to, in a sense, to read easily the energy momentum tensor given a solution, given a bulk exact solution. It is not trivial, although it's not hard, it's not trivial to obtain the boundary metric for K radius, a little bit less trivial to obtain it for the tau gnat, but somehow using this technique, you can do it, and that's how we obtain the metric for the tau gnat. So I think I finished with this crass course on holography, and I will move now to the tau gnat explicit geometry. And its properties. Okay. By the way, I would like to just, if you allow me, one more comment So solving Einstein's equations in this Fermat-Graham gauge, and there is actually this B here. There is another connection coefficient here. These two things here are part of the Weyl tensor, etc. But solving Einstein's equation this way tells you that all the terms here have a nice geometrical description. F2 is the Schouten tensor. F3 is the independent thing. F4 is the Bach tensor. And that's as far as I know the people have done. It should be possible to just, you know, go a little bit further and just solve these things here and get a picture and get, you know, the geometric structure behind any bulk space, any asymptotically ADS space. It has not been done. It's a pity. I tell you because when I was younger and more powerful, well, we reached up to this guy here, which is actually in this case is the three-dimensional Bach tensor. So you find all the geometric structures here very nicely, secondly. But, you know, okay, people, you say it's enough. I'm happy when I have these things here. But there must be some nice geometric structure. There's something that you can learn if you really go all the way. Just mention.
But can you go all the way? I mean, like...
Yes. Well, you can go...
have a black hole with an horizon, for example, in the middle or something like that.
There is no assumption here for any black hole or anything here. This is just Einstein's equations, nothing else. This, what I've described here is just the solution of Einstein's equation in this gauge. What I want to say is the following. There are two initial data, which is E and F, and let me give you an example. If this is zero, this is my initial data. I fix it, it's a free parameter. It's a second order differential. I put this zero. So you will find space times which are not black holes. There's no horizon. Then what we have noticed is that this data, if they have the form of a perfect fluid, symmetric, traceless, conserved, then somehow we reconstruct the black hole space times now. The known black hole spacetimes. So one question is, where is the horizon here? How do I know that, for example, there exists an horizon? Because I can put anything here within the symmetric properties that this guy has, but anything, and let's see whether it leads to a horizon. What are the geometric properties of that? These are kind of questions that may be interesting to answer. But if I put this particular perfect tensor, you will reconstruct the horizon. But there is no horizon here. I did not put any horizon here, at least to lead in orders. But I definitely reconstruct the black hole. I know that. The connection between this expansion and the black hole reconstruction is not known. I think it's a useful, it's an interesting exercise. Okay, now, again, the Taubnat solution, finally. I will write it just for reference. The solution is something like that. Okay, I will not write what is VR, but it's on the same, in the general class of this kind of solutions. This is the two sphere. This is the same potential VR. And the critical issue is that the Taubnat is not dt square, but it has this cosine theta d phi square. And so VR is a potential which is depends on n, obviously. But OK, let me not write it here. People believe that this is a black hole. I put a question mark here, whether it's a black hole. Well, why it is a black hole? Because there is a horizon. Here, you can have a V, you know, R plus equals zero. And if you do the usual stuff, you go to Euclidean space. So did I write, I wrote something stupid here, obviously. Well, you can go to the Euclidean analytic continuation. And what you find is the usual 4 pi, which is like L squared plus 3 r plus square plus 3 n square over 4 pi l square r plus. And when n equals 0, this is the Schwarzschild result. And people think that there is a temperature here. That's fine. The boundary now, energy momentum tensor, if you do the calculations, is a perfect fluid of this form, P 3 um un plus g min e. Well, this rho is the black, is the mass in the bulk, the mass parameter, g l square, symmetric, conserved, and traceless. And the important thing is that what I wrote, it's P actually. P, the same P here. I cannot, that's why I had my other glasses, but. Okay, now, the boundary geometry is in the general class of Randers, Papapetru, as we call them, geometries. Plus 2n, 1 minus cosine theta d phi square plus l square d omega 2 square. And what is the main characteristic of this geometry? The main characteristic of this geometry, it is that it has a non-trivial Cotton tensor, which means that it's not conformally flat. And you can calculate it. And the tensor has exactly the form of a perfect fluid. Now, again, back to my favorite expansion here. The Cotton tensor of any geometry is in the expansion of the magnetic field. And you can show explicitly that there is a term here, which is the second order contribution, which is exactly the Cotton tensor of your geometry. It can be zero, it can be non-zero. And if it is actually non-zero, then it fits the Bach tensor here, as you expect. So it's a very nice construction here. So actually, you have two energy momentum tensors, one this one and one this one. And it's a nice question. Hasn't been answered yet, as far as I understand. What if I start with this energy momentum tensor and I construct a fluid that has this kind of energy and density? It's a perfect fluid. But this is like, this is topologically, this is conserved topologically. There is no dynamics here. But it's an interesting thing. Now, what is the physics? What's the kinematics of this guy here? Which is different from what people do. The difference is that because of the non-trivial background, this fluid essentially moves, essentially rotates. And of course, this is equivalent, reminds you of the other type of rotating fluids, which is the fluid dual to the Kerr ADS. And I will make a short comparison between the two fluids to see the difference and the similarity. What is the thing here? So the velocity field is 1, 0, 0. And if I lower the coordinates is minus 1, 0, minus 2n, 1 minus cosine theta. And what you can calculate is the vorticity of this thing here, which is d mu minus. And I will give you the result for the tab knot. Okay, the S 0, 0, 0, 0, 0, minus n sine theta, 0, n sine theta, 0. So that's a fluid with a vorticity. Now, just pause for a second and think about your physics. If I have any kind of fluid that moves, in principle, you expect that this fluid dissipates. That's what fluids do. Unless there is a very, very special configuration where the fluid is non-dissipative, etc. So that is a general question for fluids that move. Essentially, that's what you do in fluid dynamics. You start with a perfect fluid, and you just make a variation of the velocity, and the derivatives of the velocity give you the dissipative contributions. It gives you viscosity, etc., shear, etc. So here we do have derivatives of the velocity, but it's in a special thing. What this fluid then has, since it has vorticity, it has a circulation. Remember your physics classes. So the circulation is, relativistic circulation is defined like that. You take this thing here, and by Stokes' theorem, it's on the, this is the bounding curve, this is the area, and so this is omega mu nu, ds mu nu. So the vorticity is like the magnetic field if this is the Gates field of your fluid. And the connection between, a description of fluids in terms of vorticity, relativistic fluid, was done by Lichnerowitz, where he wrote his famous Carter-Lichnerowitz equation equals zero. This is equivalent to what I was saying before, that you can use different canonical variables to describe. Instead of P, you can, instead of Q, you can use P. So for fluids, instead of using the velocity as your main hydrodynamic variables, you can use the vorticity. And that's what Lichnerowitz and Carter were doing if they wanted to describe actually the Kerr fluids, the rotating fluids. And there are very nice description in this way. Now, I will just write for you the Kerr fluid. The Kerr fluid is the fluid in the boundary of Kerr ADS4. It has a perfect energy momentum tensor, and the only, it has a different boundary metric, which is conformally flat, actually, in the case of Kerr. But one of the main differences is that the Kerr vorticity, it looks like that. The only non-trivial sine 2 theta, and this is minus A 2 xi sine 2 theta. Everything else is 0. So sine 2 theta instead of sine theta. This is also a rotating fluid. people have tried to study, of course, obviously, first of all, this rotating fluid for many reasons, both holographically, in flat space, etc. And what is, if you want, the biggest difference between these two fluids? Biggest difference is that if you calculate here, if you take this and you calculate this is zero, so this fluid does not have any circulation. And if you calculate the circulation in the Taubnat case, you actually find it to be minus 8 pi n proportional to the Nutt charts. And of course, okay, if you think a little bit about that, I told you this is a magnetic field. Well, okay, when does a magnetic field give you non-zero contribution? When there is a magnetic monopole, and only that. And indeed, this fluid, this system, looks like a magnetic monopole, whereas the Kerr fluid, which is again a rotating fluid, doesn't have this, this topological interpretation.
But it has the interpretation of a dipole, right?
It has the interpretation of a dipole, yes. Locally, both are fluids that have velocity and vorticity. So locally, you cannot distinguish them. Of course, they just have different kind of vorticities. But what distinguishes them in particular is the global structure. So here is where... if we want to start the investigation of Taubnat ADS, which is to try to understand the so-called dissipative properties of the Taubnat fluid and compare it or contrast it with the dissipative properties of this fluid. So that's a big task. The discussion of Kerr fluid in terms of ADS-CFT is a subject which is still open and still actually produces interesting things. What people do, they do gravitational perturbations around the Kerr black hole. They study the quasi-normal modes, effects like super radiance, etc., with numerical routines, which may actually be relevant for gravitational waves. That's not my expertise. What you want to compare is with fluid fluctuations of that fluid, which you can actually do using just standard fluid dynamics. It's a subject which, all right, it's really interesting numerically, that I don't quite understand. Now, you would like to do the same here and see whether there is something different in this fluid, whether it's something fundamentally different. And I think there is. There is something fundamentally different, which at least myself, I haven't yet resolved. So this is not really complete, the discussion. I may continue for 5 minutes, 10 minutes.
Yeah,
so.
5 minutes.
Okay. So, I set up the problem. So the problem is to study this fluid, the fluctuations of this fluid. Oops. All right. So I'll just write a few equations which can be easily written, and I think I will just explain what are the problems. Now, without much discussion, what you really want to do basically is to write down fluctuations. Well, let's take a scalar field. The usual thing is this one, G mu, the new phi field with maybe a mass equals zero. So the phi field is something that depends on t, on r, on theta, and on phi. So you want to solve this thing here. And very remarkably, like the Kerr case, which is famously separable due to Tevkolsky, this is also separable. And it gives you two equations. It gives you a radial equation. Again, I will not write it completely. R plus n squared, blah, 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 acting on the function r equals 0. If it's needed, I will write it. Well, no, there is this important thing here. Sorry. This is very important. Forgot about this. The important thing is that in the radial equation, second order equation, here I wrote first order, it's v of r dr. There's a very famous thing, which is like that. 4 n squared omega squared minus L squared. Sorry, that's not the radial equation. That's the function r theta phi, because I write it e to the minus I omega t, the function. This is one of the equations. So that's how the omega comes here, n comes here, and L square is minus of an sine square theta, sine theta d theta. It's very similar to, that's what you would get in the SU2 case. But now you get this deformation, cosine theta square, all this square, plus 4 n square omega. Now, what is this? Again, if I set E omega and G minus 2n, this is what you can find in books, is the generalized angular momentum for a particle of charge E in a magnetic monopole background of charge D. So this is, we will give you the monopole harmonics, if you want. This give you the monopole harmonics. Now, why this becomes problematic to solve, and why this is not it's a completely new thing in ADS CFT. You can try to separate further the things here, phi. So you separate this variable here so that, right, this is separable. And you can try to separate r and theta further with some r of r and some y of theta. This is fully separable, the problem. OK, so you end up with two equations, actually, the radial equation and an angular equation. So you end up with an angular equation for this thing here, which is actually, all right, some equation. Well, it's some of theta acting on y of theta. I will write it like that to give you the point. It's a second order differential operator. When n is 0, this is just the differential operator that will give you the Legendre equation. This is just the spherical, the spherical harmonics. So where is the problem here? The problem here is something that, okay, people do not, at least in my understanding, is the first time we encounter in the context of ADS-CFT. So, for example, in the Kerr case. In the Kerr case, again, you have a separability, famously. You have an angular equation like that, and the angular equation is the so-called hyperspherical, spheroidal, sorry. It's the spheroidal equation, the Tevkolsky equation. And the Tevkolsky equation, well, it looks like minus L, L plus 1, sorry. It's an equation which is something like that. And if I write an L square here, you may understand it. They write, this would be the Legendre equation. In the Kerr case, this is the Tevkolsky, the spheroidal equation, where the eigenvalues are not known, but they are known only numerically. But how do you find the eigenvalues in a differential equation problem? You set boundary conditions. We set the boundary conditions at theta equals 0 and pi, and you just use whatever technique you want to quantize the eigenvalues. Now, in this case, this is the point that we are missing. Why? Because we have an equation, and we can, well, we know that something that I didn't discuss. We know that the space-time is actually singular. There are regions in space-time where some of the killing vectors become actually null and even time-like, like the d phi, the vector related to d phi. It's not d by d phi. It's d by d phi plus d by dt. So there are regions of space-time that there are regions of this parameter here, because let's talk precisely. There are regions of this parameter, and in particular near pi, that you are not sure whether you should impose a boundary condition there or not. But if you do, if you impose the boundary condition, if you solve this equation, and if you demand that the solutions are well-defined functions everywhere, you find, as you expected, a quantization of something. What do you find? I'm not, you see, I want to just allow me one second to emphasize that. This way to obtain the quantization of L, of the angular momentum of the Legendre equation, is something that many people, even in students, they don't know. This is given by the algebraic method, that these are the eigenvalues, SU2 eigenvalues. It is very much worth doing it the hard way. The way to obtain L, L plus 1, and L being integer or half, not half integer, integer, is solve the equation, impose the boundary conditions, demand that the solution is polynomial, and then you get the solution. So in that case, that's what we can do. And by do, because there is no other way to obtain that.
We are starting to be over time.
Yes. I'm just finishing, just to give you the quantization condition. So if you demand that this is okay, this is a regular solution, you find the quantization condition for this omega. Well, this omega is 2 omega is 4 n omega. So the frequencies times the nut charts have to be k, with k an integer. So that's the quantization that you find. Now, what is the implication of that? This means that, of course, if n is real, omega must be real. But now we started the whole discussion by trying to find omega in a black hole background, and omega in a black hole background with the infalling boundary conditions is necessary complex, because these are the quasi-normal modes. So if we accept that, there are no quasi-normal modes. Well, that means that the infalling boundary conditions are not good enough. So there is no black hole. That, I think that's my conclusion, because mathematics tells me that this is the conclusion, once I accept that. Of course, this is equivalent. You can actually show that under this thing here, it's equivalent to the Meissner condition, exactly. So whether you like it or not, if this holds, you are describing a system that has modes quantized with this parameter like that. And what is this? And I finish with that. What could this be? I gave you before the Taubnat circulation. And I told you that this was like 8 pi. Remember what I gave you, the circulation. Pi n. It was something with, yeah, it was a pi n. The circulation. I calculated classically. Using this, the circulation, just use that, I write the circulation like that, 2 pi, h bar, omega k. I just multiplied by, I put this m, k. Well, this is the result that you will find in any book on superconductivity or superfluidity. It is the quantization of the circulation of a vortex. It's exactly, even the numbers match. Of course, they should, because I'm describing. OK, so one part of the story is that if you assume that, well, you cannot escape this. But, of course, we could try to play more. We could say, no, we don't want to assume that. There is something in the South Pole here in pi. There is a kind of horizon here where I need to impose a different kind of boundary conditions. And so there is something here. There is a vortex. And that may describe a dissipative fluid that has indeed complex frequencies, which are the quasi-normal modes. And this is where we are at the moment. So thank you, and sorry for going a little bit over time.
We are a bit over time, so maybe one or two questions if there is. And after, also Tassos is going to be here also next week, so you can grab him.
Yeah, I will hear.
I have when you have it's kind of, you have Dirac string, Meissner string at the Bohr prism. It's not related to what you.
Yeah, this is, what is the Meissner string? The Meissner string is, essentially is described by this.
Conical deficit.
Yeah, the Meissner string is a conical deficit, and you are forced to, if you do not want the Meissner string, you are forced to impose this periodicity condition, which is telling you that time is circular, if you want. Okay, so this is a property of the bulk solution. Yeah, I did not discuss all these properties. I wanted to present that just from the point of view of the classical differential equations that follow from studying this problem, because it's very similar to the differential equations that follow from Kerr ADS. Separable, two differential equations, one radial, you have to impose boundary conditions, one angular, again, you have to impose boundary conditions. But you see, if you look at them a little bit carefully, you rediscover all the properties of your bulk solution. That's the I think that's how holography should work, backwards as well. So even more than that, if I and which is again under discussion, if I take the three-dimensional fluid, which is a perfect fluid, and I put it on the background of the geometry, which I didn't write, which is the geometry of boundary of ADS, of Taubnat, this is a three-dimensional system. There is no R, there is no radial direction, there is nothing. I can try now to study this system, the properties of this system. And at least to the first approximation, I find the same things without having to go in the bulk. That should be the case. Well, maybe, but that, I think that's the case.
Great, thank you. Thank you. Have a question or not? Let's not
thank you very much.